Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. Greetings to you wherever you may be. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yes, I'm trying to figure out which of the Chinese takeout places that Tim Sherwood was ordering from during the Spurs match. It apparently must be pretty good if he's ordering during the match.
Yes, I'm thinking he's a Kung Pao chicken type of guy.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You know, bold, you know, characteristic. It's got and, guts.
Yeah, and can leave you with a bad taste in your mouth if it's overcooked. Yeah.
So, all right, folks. Welcome to the show. We are glad to have you here. And before we get to the rundown, I always like to give a little side update. And, Corey, we are at the end of another month, and guess what has happened?
I think we're breaking records. Maybe even, you know, winning some kind of trophy or something.
That
maybe
is right. Two Daft Yanks is broken. We have broken our site traffic record yet again, thanks to those of you who read and listen, who read the blog and listen to the podcast. So a round of applause for you, our friendly peoples.
Yeah.
We smashed the record. It's still every day we're adding to it. We broke it early in this current week, and we still have tomorrow. And tonight, for that matter. So thank you, all of you, for listening to the pod and to reading the blog. And a special thanks, to borrow a word from your lexicon, Corey, I am chuffed.
Yeah.
Because last night, my blog in the midweek about Julian Green and telling people, hey, let's be patient with this kid. He's got all this talent. Let's just let him develop. And if we do that, there's a good chance he's going to reach what we think and what the Bayern Munich staff think he can reach as a player. And guess who retweeted that and said, hey, that was a very good article?
Oh, well, this doesn't count because he told me. It was apparently Julian Green's father.
Yes! So if you're listening, sir, thank you for your service to this great country and the Army. Absolutely. And thank you for your son. May he score many a goals and have many caps and a U.S. national team shirt.
And if you would, Mr. Green, if you're listening, I had a joke and it jumped out of my head. It was going to be something about Klinsmann and diving. Oh, well.
Okay, let's get to the rundown quick. Let's just tell you what's on the show today. We're going to talk about
false nine for Spurs there. Okay.
The ever-changing Premier League story arc. We will follow that up with the English and their love for banners. Next, we're going to tell you the epic battle of Big Sam versus the Boo Birds. We will talk about the UEFA Nations League, which this concept was just announced this week. And then we will finish up with some talk of the U.S. men's national team playing in Mexico in a not-so-friendly on Wednesday night in Phoenix, Arizona. So, with that, are you ready to rock and roll, sir?
Yup.
All right, as we said, every week the results change the face of the Premier League table. And, you know, Corey and I in blogs and on the previous podcasts have used this as kind of a mocking cry. But, Corey, it's true now. Cop to the top!
Yeah.
Hop to the top, baby.
It's about time.
Liverpool's back.
Yeah. Oh, it's only been, what, quarter century or something?
So Liverpool with their win the day over Tottenham Hotspur, which was 4-0. And so they are back to the top of the table where they rightfully belong, huh?
Yeah, I can only imagine that one of our former co-workers is probably now jumping ship back to Liverpool again.
That's probably true. You know who you are, and shame on you. But anyway, so now you've seen why last week, I think it was either at the beginning of the show or the end of the show, I said, hey, I'm not giving out any more predictions because you have no idea what's going to happen. So this weekend we saw Crystal Palace defeat Chelsea through a John Terry own goal.
And arguably should have been up 3-0 at one point.
They had a lot of great chances that they missed. And I missed the Terry own goal live.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was brilliant. And then I was trying to figure a way the rest of the afternoon to work in a John Terry. It's not the first time he scored on his own team. A joke in there. But I couldn't find a tasteful way to do it.
Tasteful?
Yeah, I know.
Wow, what is this?
That's boo on me for being tasteful. So you had the Crystal Palace victory, which gives Palace a chance to stay up now. They're in good shape, considering that the schedule that they have left is somewhat favorable. So that was a big result for them. And then at the same time was the end of the Cardiff-West Brom game. It was one of the best endings you'll see in any sport.
Oh, yeah, it was freaking bonkers.
So that is what we have to look forward to for the final 6 weeks of the Prem season, folks. I'm excited for it. And a lot of unpredictable stuff except for, as we said, the ever-predictable Liverpool steamrolling of Spurs and Sherwood sitting up in the stands.
Yes, and ordering takeout.
And I hope he tipped that guy well.
Well, I was going to say, maybe the takeout wasn't that well, and that's what the whole bust-up in the dressing room was about afterwards.
That's possible.
Respect the gilet!
All right, so is there anything else you would like to mention about this weekend's matches before we move on?
No, other than the obligatory Arsenal mention that I thought we did pretty well, considering I was expecting to lose again. So, other than that, no.
Even at home?
Yeah. Just, you know, we're looking tired and jaded, and I just expected to give up a late goal.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually were the ones that were threatening to win the dang game at the end. I was surprised. So.
Right. So, yeah, so they pulled out the point, and are you even with Everton on points right now, or are they still three back?
I forget now because I thought we were six, but I think that was before they had played.
Yeah.
Yes, they're three back, but I think they have a game in hand.
Yes, and you play them next week. So that is the highlight of the week next week. Will be Everton versus Arsenal. So we will look forward to that. But now let's talk about, just quickly, let's just hit this because it was such a big news, and it was big news all week, especially in, it was quite the controversy, as they like to say.
Yes.
Over there was this David Moyes airplane banner. And people were rising hell saying, oh, you can't do this. It's bad for the club. The guy was getting wholly criticized. But I want to see where you stand on such banners being used in modern English football.
Yeah, I mean, the criticism I can completely understand, even though it's amusing to me. You know, to the level some people would go. But yeah, the whole banner thing, I'm not an activist, or, you know, I'm not prone to the activist protesting type of mindset anyway. So to me, you know, like protesting with signs is usually, especially now that you have things like social media and other ways to get your message out more effectively, to me, generally, they're a waste of time. And especially something like that where, what were they saying, it costs like £800 or something? So that's like $1,300. That's the kind of thing, you know, if you're that outraged about something, you know, I would spend a damn $1,300 and, you know, donate it to charity or something. I don't know. I guess my point is I'm typically, while amusing, they're generally stupid and a waste of time, those kind of banners.
Okay, and so you're channeling your inner David Moyes, because that's exactly what he said. They said they'd have been better off donating the money to Fletcher's charity.
Oh, see, see, I didn't even see that he had said that. But yeah.
Are you a Man U sympathizer?
Oh God! Apparently, I am at this point. I don't know what the hell's going on here. But no, like I said, I can understand the criticism. But yeah, those kind of protests are, in my opinion, it's more about look at me. You know, even though it's technically anonymous, it's more about look at me and my message and my group than actually doing something.
Well, you know, a lot of people were criticizing and saying, "Hey, it's not going to accomplish anything," but. You know, what's the first word of PR? I mean, any PR is good PR, and so everybody was talking about it. So in my opinion, the group that did it, which was apparently some, like, internet message board, was that it worked, as far as I'm concerned, because everybody was talking about this. The TV was talking about it. They were showing it on TV.
But there's a difference between getting your message out and then affecting change, and that's where the protest mindset sometimes doesn't understand is that, okay, yeah, I saw the banner and people are talking about it. Is Moyes going to get fired of it? Is Moyes going to get fired over it? That's a different issue. So, yeah, you got your message out, but did you really affect change?
No, and I agree with you on that point that, yeah, it's not like, you know, the Man U board was up there eating their prawn sandwiches and they said, hey, look, a plane. Oh, Moyes out? Oh, yeah. Yeah, sounds like a good idea. Let's do that.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, to me, that's the real issue. It's like, okay, you sign a petition. Oh, I have 5,000 signatures. I got my message out. But is it really going to accomplish anything, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. So then in modern football today, if a banner doesn't work, is there anything you can really do other than, I guess, not showing up to the games, the matches anymore to...
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say is... Quit turning off. Quit buying the merch. Quit buying the tickets. Because that's the fastest way, and it's not just football. It's anything. The fastest way to affect change is to hit somebody in their pocketbook.
And we know that football today is like crack, so most people aren't willing to do that.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing with people's that, you know, it's one thing to say you're all hopping mad and I'm never going to do this and I'm never going to do that, but when you tune in the following weekend, you know, you're caving in. So you, like I said, there's a difference between taking a real stand and then just mouthing up, you know, what ends up being, you know, somebody mouthing off just to make themselves feel better. Because it's, you know, I will use the same example of, you know, when the NBA or Major League Baseball got boring to me, or when I didn't like what was going on, I quit watching. So now the NBA and the Major League Baseball doesn't get my money, but so, like I said, that's a big difference between that and then the same people, or the same kind of people that would say that, but then next year, you know, they're buying the new hat, they're buying the new season package to watch. So, like I said, talking and doing something about it's two different things. So.
Mm-hmm. So very well said. And then the other banner I wanted to make light of was Chelsea had a banner and their 1-0 loss to Crystal Palace, which I enjoy saying that.
Yes.
We might say that, you know, just randomly throughout the show.
Oh, especially the way the distraught look John Terry had on his face after he scored the own goal, too, which just made the whole Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And apparently Jose Mourinho was so distraught he was taking it out on ball boys.
Yeah, jokingly say the racist Mourinho, because he was taking it out on a young... what are they called over there? African English? Or a young black English ball boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Mourinho's a racist.
But at the Chelsea match, they had a sign that reads, and you could see this on 2daftyanks.com. Just go to the podcast and click on, when we mentioned the banner, you could click on it and get the image here. It says, "Jealousy is a hard emotion to hide. London's first, London's finest." Chelsea, they love them a banner there.
Oh, yeah.
At Chelsea. I mean, remember the countless Rafa out banners last year when he was named intern manager?
Yeah, well, they like him a banner because they recycle most of the ones they used in their English Defense League marches.
Yeah. That's possibly true.
Yeah. Just saying, you know, there's a lot of neo-Nazi type people that like him some Chelsea.
No comment.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I've just been named in two libel suits for the comments in the last 5 minutes here, but...
So,
hey,
all right.
I'll enjoy the extradition trip to England, so...
Well, I don't know. Do we extradite for stuff like that here in the United States? I don't think so.
Well, I was just looking for an excuse to visit England.
Okay, yeah. Someday soon, sir. All right. Now, here's something that's kind of related, and actually, this should be getting more talk than the banner talk. So let's have a discussion here. And this is very interesting to me. Now, I watched the end of this match. I think I watched the second half, and I saw the reaction, and they talked about it on TV. But here's the case of old Big Sam versus the Boo Birds at West Ham. And so West Ham, they were red carded. They were down to 10 men. And they won the match down to 10 men. Or am I getting that backwards? Were they down to 10 men or not? See, now that makes no sense to me now. I'm confused.
Yeah, I don't remember because I had to work. So I didn't catch that match.
You had to work. All right, hold on. I'm pretty sure they were down to 10 men because that's why it was interesting that they still won. They won the match 2-1.
I was going to say, I know somebody was down to 10 men, but I don't know which club.
It happened midweek, so we're sorry. This is highly unprofessional of us. We're doing on-air research. I didn't write this down in my notes. No, my bad. Hull was down to 10 men. That's exactly right. Hull was down to 10 men. So West Ham was a man up. But at times, you really couldn't tell that they were a man down, whole. And West Ham was still playing their long ball tactics. And even though they won the match, their fans were booing at the end of the match. And Big Sam, there's a picture of him. And if you go to the link that we have on 2daftyanks.com, you'll get to see him holding his, you know, holding his hand to his ears as they're booing.
The cup in the ears.
Yeah, cup in the ears. And I just want to read his quotes here. So bear with me as I go through this. So here's, and this is from The Independent out in the UK. And you can see the picture. And Fat Leno's back there, too. It's kind of a good picture. You got Fat Sam and Fat Leno there together. But Sam Allardyce sent out a personal email to West Ham fans after the victory, after there was the booing and the jeering. And let me read a couple of his quotes. He says, "I've not experienced that before in my time. I've been in the game," he said. "We're aiming to get results wherever we go. It was a very unusual night. Sometimes we need to win ugly," is what he told his fans. He's like, "It's a very unusual night during the 2-1 win against Hull City. For the first time this season, we had to play against 10 men, where normally we've had to play with 10 men this year and won. Last night, the opposition have gone down to 10 men and not one, and I think everybody should remember that." So where do you stand on this, to where the West Ham fans seem to be having kind of a reaction that Stoke fans had after a few years of Pulis, to where they were sick of the long ball tactics?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, because normally, you know, usually results in the long run override the style, Chelsea. But I don't know. I think this is part of this kind of growing movement amongst fans. You know, they see the likes of Southampton, Everton, Swansea, etc., be able to go on and get some success and move up the table with a style that's more of a, you know, passing, free-flowing type of style, or, you know, to where you're getting some teams that can even play a more eye-pleasing brand of football, but still kind of keep a counter-attacking, you know, style to it. So I don't know, that would be my guess where a lot of this is coming from, is that I think more fans are just kind of getting... I don't know if jealous is the right word, but, you know, they're seeing other clubs, like I said, get some success and move up the table with a more pleasing style. And, you know, like I said, I think people just seeing that, and they're kind of thinking of, well, why can't we get a guy that comes in and puts that kind of style, you know, at our club. So.
Well, you used the word jealous, and that's right. They're jealous of Chelsea, as we just knew about from the banner talk.
Yeah.
But no, that is an interesting point that you make. And it is also interesting that you kind of mention Southampton, and everybody believes that they're playing this free-flowing football, and they are for the most part, but they still are at times a counter-attacking side. And if you have read my blog on 2daftyanks.com, you actually find out that Southampton actually lead the Premier League in long passes, according to whoscored.com. Now what how long is a long pass? I don't know. So that could kind of, you know, muddy the water when you're looking at that statistic.
Yeah, and I would also argue that there's a difference between long passing and when people talk about long ball tactics, that usually means hoofing it up to a battering ram type of target forward, where Southampton's long passes, I'm guessing a lot of those come up the flanks and on counters, where the ball is going to be where the ball will be played into space for guys to run onto. Now, granted, they have a strong target type of forward with Ricky Lambert, but like I said, obviously I'm not going to disagree with the facts of Southampton playing more long balls, but like I said, I think it'd be pretty evident if you put Southampton next to West Ham, the difference in the type of long ball tactics would become kind of evident.
Mm-hmm. So maybe for these statistical companies who, and still in soccer and football, European football in general, there is kind of a lack of these stats. And there's some great companies that keep some track of some stats, but I think perhaps that you're right that maybe there needs to be differentiation between a long pass and then, you know, obviously hoofing it up to the box. It would be really interesting to see if a company started keeping track of the hoofing. That's the obvious hoofing passes, to see who leads in that category.
Yeah, because, like I said, anybody who's played a few matches, you know, can tell the difference between, like you said, hoofing the ball up to a center forward in the box, hoping for a rebound or a flick-on type of pass, and then, you know, playing 30, 40-yard cross-field balls into space, or, you know, passes over the top in defense for sprightly little forwards to run onto.
Mm-hmm. So here's another question for you.
All right.
West Ham is only in their second season back after they were relegated. So this is their second season back in the Prem. So are the fans being a little bit too harsh with Allardyce, considering that, well, sure, I'm sure he would love, well, no, maybe not him, but I'm sure the club in general would like to play more attacking football, but the fact is they're playing the style they need to play to stay up, to be able to keep bringing in that Premier League level revenue.
Well, yeah, well, I think if you want to go, you know, to the root, the actual root of it, it's like any issue is what's actually the purpose of the club. Is it to provide the entertainment of the fans, or is it to win games? And I think that's what kind of distinguishes football, you know, / soccer fans from a lot of other sports, is that there is, on the part of most fans, kind of an innate an innate desire to see, some flair or some, you know, the quote unquote beautiful game, where, you know, over here, Miami Heat fans, when they had Pat Riley, they could have cared less if they won 65-60 in a professional basketball game where there's only, a field goal every 5 minutes, and it basically turns into a free throw shooting contest. So, like I said, I think that's where do you fall? You know, where does somebody, or where does the opinion actually fall on this? Is it on the club to provide success or entertainment for the fans? You know.
Mm-hmm. Now, allow me to kind of going the Daft side here for a second, but when you mentioned the winning versus the entertained, in this age of internet memes, I'm surprised we haven't seen Sam Allardyce's head pasted onto Russell Crowe with the tagline, "Are you not entertained?"
Yeah, no, because that's basically what it amounts to. You know, it's like, and that's, you know, sometimes that's where I kind of try to put myself when I'm watching my team's play, is like, especially when we're doing poorly, is like, this is all, at the end of the day, entertainment. So try not to take the stuff too seriously, but at the same time, you know, where as a fan do I derive my entertainment from? Is it strictly from the success of my club, or is it strictly from how we play, or is it a little bit of both, you know, to where, you know, obviously that's where, you know, you're a freaking Chelsea fan, they're going to argue because of all their trophies and their, you know, what they're implying with their banner, that it's about success and trophies, et cetera, when, you know, a lot of times as a fan, I don't have to adhere to the trophies mantra to get entertainment and enjoyment from a club. So, like I said, to me, it kind of, that's the core of the issue, is where, you know, how much success or how much entertainment do you derive from a club, and where do you, you know, where do you, or you know, what of, what about a club entertains you? You know, is it the style? Is it the ethos? Is it the players? Is it, you know, success, et cetera, et cetera?
So I guess that's the question, is as a club, would you rather play entertaining football and get relegated? Or would you rather do what you need to do to stay up to preserve your Premier League status? And I guess the one of the poster childs for this argument could be Blackpool, who, it's been three or four seasons now, where they were kind of the darlings, like Swansea was last year and how Southampton has now. They were the darlings of the Premier League because they played such attacking football, but look where it got them. So it is, it's a tough question.
Yeah, no, and that's definitely where, you know, obviously clubs have to worry about that, because, you know, in an American league where you don't have relegation, you know, you could, at least for a few seasons, you could kind of become a median fan darling, playing a swashbuckling, you know, devil-may-care style, because you wouldn't have to worry about relegation and the financial cost of that, where, you know, obviously in Europe you do, which, you know, is obviously basically the main crux of Allardyce's point is, you know, what are you people complaining for? I'm keeping us in the EPL, so.
And when you mention American League, do you just mean American in general, like sports in general?
Yes, you know, like, you know, just say, for example, if Paul Westphal came back in the NBA and he played the fast break style where they just chunk a shot up every 5 seconds. I mean, you know, he would probably last a season or two even with a smaller market team just because of the entertaining style. But at the same time, they don't really have to worry too much about the financial ramifications of that because you have all sorts of TV revenue sharing in the NBA or in an American league, where over there they don't have that kind of stuff.
So okay.
Or you know, you do end up losing money by being relegated. So
yeah,
that's just what I meant.
Very good. So there's Big Sam versus the Boo Birds, and hopefully this gets some more coverage because it's very interesting to me, this philosophical argument. And you know, maybe if whoever the developers are of Angry Birds are, they could get really smart, and they could have, you know, you could be Allardyce shooting stuff at Angry Birds, you know, the Boo Birds. A West Ham themed Angry Birds application.
Yeah, or just as long as they have, you know, little comments as you're playing, like, who wants fun? We just want success.
Yeah, all right. Instead of throwing birds, you could throw hammers at things.
Yeah. there you go.
Oh, boy. Hammers, there's an idea.
Samba head.
There's an idea for a program savvy West Ham supporter. We just gave it to you. Take it. And all we ask is for 1% of your proceeds.
Yeah. Hammers, long balls, and Chris Samba heads. And Andy Carroll ponytails.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man, delayed reaction.
Okay, let's get to another laughing matter.
Like a linesman call.
I don't know if it's another laughing matter. But let's talk about this UEFA Nations League that was just announced, that it is now happening. And I should have known because it was either a Monday or Tuesday, ESPN had an article about this. And I remember hearing about it several months ago, maybe in October. I think it was Norwegian newspapers, of all places, leaked out, hey, this is going to happen. And sure enough, so on Tuesday, ESPN talked about it. And then the very next day, bam, it was announced by UEFA that they are organizing what they're calling the UEFA Nations League. And the details are very scarce at this point in time. But basically, the idea is that every 2 years, it will replace friendlies in the fall. And these teams will play in a league that is going to be divided up by FIFA ranking or something. So there's going to be, you know, four or five divisions between the 54 UEFA members. And they'll break those divisions up into a couple groups. They'll play each other home and away. And there'll be some type of playoff system in the spring, I think. And they're going to tie this into World Cup qualifying and UEFA Championship qualifying in the future. The details are scarce, but just tell me, from what we kind of know, which isn't much, what do you think about this concept?
I don't like it because the ostensible reason is, as you said, to get rid of the quote-unquote meaningless friendlies and to attach some value onto it. And like one of the articles I read, I think it had I don't remember if it was Platini or somebody else, but the guy was quoted as, well, the fans don't like the meaningless friendlies, so we want to, you know, so we want to make those important, which he was completely equivocating why fans don't like the meaningless friendlies. It's not so much they don't like that they don't have value or that they don't have a quote-unquote meaning. It's that they're there in the first place, forced into generally important parts of the season where clubs have to send away their players. And, you know, now granted, this is going to come off as Arsenal-centric complaint with the injuries, but, you know, we've had bad luck with guys getting injured on international duty. So like I said, to me, it's ridiculous that, because this is inevitably, because especially if they're going to add a playoff in the spring, this is inevitably going to add more games. So, like I said, to me, it's equivocating the point that it's not about giving value to friendlies. It's about getting rid of those friendlies altogether and letting players play a little less so that they can play at higher levels when they do play.
Mm-hmm. And that is a good goal to have, I do believe. Because as we mentioned on the show many a times, this is going to give the smaller countries, with this league is going to have promotion and relegation. So this will give the smaller nations chances to have some upward mobility, play better teams, improve their player pool, and get better, which is something we support. But it is interesting that you do mention the fact that people don't like the meaningless friendlies, but you do have to think about it from the club's point of view. And from the club's point of view, I think this actually makes things worse, because now, instead of playing in friendlies, where, you know, maybe you might be able to tell the manager of that team, yeah, but you could play my guy, but only play him in the first half. Well, now these games count for something. So now these players are going to have to play a full 90 minutes most of the time now.
Yeah, a full 90 minutes in more competitive matches that there's going to be more of. So like I said, to me, it's a money grab by UEFA under the guise of you know, replacing friendlies with something meaningful, but it basically, they're trying to extend their influence in the qualification tournament to get more money, basically.
Mm-hmm. And that is the driving force, and that's the first thing I had written down. So what's the driving force? Well, just like with anything else, it's...
Yep, like anything else.
UEFA coffers. That's what you're hearing right now. As they're negotiating that TV deal that they'll have.
Yeah, now what... And what does interest me a little bit, and why I'll probably be a sucker and watch some of them initially, is that they're going to tie it to World Cup qualification some kind of way. But yeah, overall, like I said, to me it's just going to add more games, more competitive games where players are going to pick up injuries because they're, you know, they're playing longer, and you know, the stress kind of injuries, the fatigue kind of injuries, and that it's basically a, you know, a veiled money grab by UEFA.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're getting to a problem here, to where you're going to be adding these competitive games, which are, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 a year, on top of, you know, already your league competition, your continental competition, if you're in one. So I don't see how this is good, unless you're going to basically get to the point where someday there's basically no off season.
Well, yeah, because that's what I was going to say, because that's where, yet again, there's a big difference to American sports, is a lot of these guys, if you're playing international football, you may not have an actual off season for two and a half years sometimes, because especially if you play in something like the Confederations Cup, since that's a small tournament, sometimes that's the only, that would be the only summer that some guys get off. Because, you know, obviously that's going to be in an odd year where they're, and because it's a FIFA-sponsored competition, UEFA and FIFA generally, you know, kind of have a moratorium on friendlies that month. Or, you know, the bigger nations generally don't play friendlies that month. So like I said, sometimes that's the only summer those guys get off. So like I said, if you're going to extend it every 2 years to where you're going to have these competitive games, like you said, at some point, you may see an actual off-season disappear altogether, which from a standpoint, or from a fan standpoint, is obviously, you know, a good thing in one aspect, because, you know, you have year-round football to watch. But like I said, from a player standpoint, I think you're just going to see more and more guys pick up these fatigue type of injuries.
Mm-hmm. So the devil is in the details with this, and we don't have a lot of details right now. But I kind of support what they're doing. I understand what they're trying to do. And I guess we can't fully evaluate it until we understand how it's actually going to work. But there's some really good things, as we mentioned. It's going to help some of these smaller nations get better, I do believe. But from a club point of view, they cannot be happy at all.
Yeah, no, because it's definitely... because again, I can see, like anything else, it's the competition that will eventually expand, or not that the competition itself would expand, but some sort of the round system, you're going to get more and more matches at some point, I think. So I don't know.
Yeah,
from
a couple articles I read, they won't rule out that the fact that there could be countries from other confederations could be invited to participate in this tournament. They're not ruling that out.
Yeah, which, like I said, it's kind of... I don't know. To me, it's the main thing is it's a veiled money grab.
No, it is. Money is the driving force behind this, as with anything. And let's think about this outside of the European perspective. And if you remember our discussion, which was one of our highly rated episodes, by the way, Corey, was our talk about... during our post-World Cup draw talk, mm-hmm. and our discussion regarding FIFA rankings. This makes things very difficult for nations outside of UEFA and CONMEBOL. Because remember how the FIFA rankings are built up.
Right.
You get 100% of points for playing nations from UEFA and CONMEBOL. And now UEFA is pretty much shutting up shop to where your opportunity, if you're outside of UEFA, to play a UEFA nation is going to be limited now. So they already have a stranglehold on the rankings, but now if they're going to be forced to play other European nations where they're getting full points, I could see very soon to where the top, you know, 10 to 15 nations in the UEFA rankings are all from South America and Europe, because Africa, CONCACAF, and Asia don't have the ability to play these nations anymore on a regular basis.
Yeah, and as you're talking, it just occurred to me what one of the real actual reasons for this tournament is, politically speaking. It's basically to boost those FIFA rankings so that they hold on to, or so that their case for automatic World Cup spots is bolstered because of the rankings.
Mm-hmm, and I read that as well, because Blatter is a blabbling idiot and corrupt. He is on record of wanting more places in Africa and Asia, more places in the World Cup for Africa and Asia, because he thinks that Europe has too many. And so that's a good point. So the question is here is, see, now with UEFA having this, turning these friendlies into competitions, meaning, remember, everything's based on a scale. So a friendly is worth on the lowest part. But now that they're playing this in an actual tournament and it's going to be involved with World Cup qualification, as well as UEFA qualification, that means these matches are going to have a little more weight in terms of points in the FIFA rankings than a friendly does. So that's going to put all the other nations at a disadvantage, because they're not going to be able to get those points. And that's why when I first read about this, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday morning, I was having discussions with people on Twitter saying the first thing to battle this is CONCACAF needs to come to some agreement with CONMEBOL.
Yeah.
Where we play in some type of tournament that mimics this to help boost our region's ability to develop players, develop teams, and develop nations.
Copa Western Hemisphere.
Well, a Copa America.
Yeah.
Every two years.
Yeah, true Copa America.
I would ditch the Gold Cup. I would never play another Gold Cup, and let's just go straight Copa America to where we play South American nations. That'd be the best for football in the Americas, I think, to counteract what UEFA is doing.
Yeah, and I think you could get South American nations on board with that, even though traditionally, you know, they've wanted to, you know, to remain predominantly South American. But I think because of the TV markets and the growing Latin community in North America and especially the United States, yeah, I think you could get them on board with marketing and television revenue.
You're going to get more.
Yeah.
Yes, and so it hasn't been announced yet, but it's close to being done. It should be announced. I'm hearing that it's going to be announced after the World Cup, that the Copa America will be coming to the United States in 2016. But that makes more sense. They could get, you know, better TV deals if the Copa America is based. It doesn't have to be based every time in North America, but or in the United States. But I'm guessing 4 out of 5 times, if it's hosted in the United States, and maybe once in, you know, Brazil or Argentina or whatever. Brazil by that point in time, if they get the stadiums done, will have a good infrastructure set to be able to host these events. Which is still, it's ridiculous if you're following that there's stadiums that are still, they're not even sure if they're going to be done in time for the World Cup. Now that's a conversation for another podcast perhaps, but I do believe that for CONCACAF and other nations to compete with UEFA now, unless the FIFA rankings are redone, and there's a good argument that they probably should be, because it's a joke of a system. But if in the current system, for the United States to be able to improve ourselves, to give us a chance to compete in the future, we need to find a way to link up with CONMEBOL.
Yeah, because UEFA is basically doing what Switzerland as a nation did with their World Cup qualification, to where, like I said, I think that's the secret, agenda to this, that like I said, it's going to boost their rankings argument when Blatter wants to give another spot to Africa or something. You know, they're then going to turn around and, oh, well, look, yeah, but look at our FIFA rankings. The European nations are so much stronger because of, you know, like, as you were saying, this, the way it's ranked with everything, with most all of their matches going to be competitive matches now, their rankings are going to be boosted. So.
Yes, and that reminds me that I do remember that there were the rumors that FIFA was thinking about expanding the World Cup to 48 nations. And with this UEFA Nations League coming into form, I believe that that is what's going to happen. Unfortunately. Now, I don't know. I'm still on the fence on that. Obviously, if you add 16 nations to the World Cup, you're going to allow more competition and different nations to partake in the event, but you may water it down to the point to where it's no longer really meaningful.
Yeah, because and then at that point you would have there's roughly 200 nations somewhere about, so if you have 50, that would be about a quarter. Yeah, that would be getting a little too many teams into the tournament, I think, at that point.
So we'll see what happens. So, all right. Let's wrap that up. Very good. I'm glad we had that discussion. I don't think many other podcasts will talk about this in the way we did. So we're going to pat ourselves on the back and clap for us. Because we're DAC.
Yeah, because I was going to say, even if they do talk about it, they're not going to read into some of the political machinations of it.
No, because what was it? You mentioned a couple weeks ago to where we were talking about something and we said, hey, listen to us because no one else is going to talk about this. And you listen to a very, don't mention the name, but you listen to a very, 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 very prominent podcast. And they basically said, we're not touching this because it's too controversial.
Yes.
That happened. But we don't care. We have no fear. Nobody could pay us off. Nobody could shut us up. We are here and we are here to stay.
But if somebody does want to pay us at all, we are willing to listen to offers. Thank you.
That's true. We will take sponsorship.
Yes.
Especially from beer companies.
Oh.
Breweries.
Oh, yeah, I'm still holding out for Lagunitas one day.
Lagunitas. Yes. All right. Let's wrap up the show now with some talk of the UN's men's national team versus Mexico. And this is a friendly, but as you all know, there's no such thing as a friendly when the United States and Mexico play 90 minutes on a football pitch.
Yeah, it's friendly, like Game of Thrones friendly, stab you in the back kind of friendly.
Yes, and we're what? We're only a week away from Game of Thrones premiere.
Yeah!
Oh my goodness!
Man!
Ah!
That sound goes wild. Yeah, the real tournament of the spring. Game of Thrones. Anyway.
All right. So Jurgen Klinsmann has announced his roster last week, and it includes, as we mentioned before in our blog, one Mr. Julian Green, the young Bayern Munich starlet, as I've seen many times printed.
Yes.
And his dad loves us, by the way, as we mentioned that before.
Yeah. See, gotta call it like the English, the young ace.
Yes. American future ace.
Yes.
And so I didn't have this on our list, but I'll ask you this question because we have time. We're actually running ahead of schedule for once in our lives. This is
all right, go us.
Yeah. With Julian Green, how much playing time do you expect him to see? Do you think he'll start? Do you think he'll come into the second half? Do you think he'll play the last 30? Do you think he'll play the last 15? What is your prediction?
Yeah, I don't know, because, I mean, I still would like to see at some point more playing time for Aaron Johansson, too, so...
He's not on the roster, though. Remember, this is an MLS-based roster. Okay, come on now.
Okay. No. Okay, I thought you meant in terms of the future of the U.S. team.
No. I'm talking about this match against Mexico.
Gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. I would throw him on for probably the last half hour.
Okay, the 60-minute mark, throw him out there.
Maybe even a second-half sub, but yeah, at least I would like to give him more than a quarter of an hour. So like I said, throw him on 60, 65, somewhere around there.
And you would play him as the striker or on the left wing as an inside forward?
That I don't know, because I have yet to see him play, so I'm not sure what his skills are. So I would have to look more into that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So say I have no idea what Klinsmann's going to do, but I know he's going to play. But probably the last 30 minutes makes sense. That's probably the most likely thing. But if he gets more, I'm not going to complain. It'll be great.
Yeah, because
yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, just reiterate, I would like to see him play more than 15 minutes, because sometimes in an international friendly, you know, you get on for the last 15 minutes and, you know, you might barely get a touch. So, like I said, I would like to see him get at least 20, 25 minutes, half an hour, to that where, you know, you give him enough time to kind of get in the game or, you know, a chance to get into the game.
And that makes sense, but I could see where Klinsmann might try to protect him. So I think 30 makes sense. I don't think he'll come in the second half, because as I said, you can't expect him to hit the ground running. So people need to just back off. Whatever happens, happens. Just let the kid develop and we'll see what he can bring. But Klinsmann is an astute talent evaluator, and I forgot about this. I had this written down. And there's a great article, and I will link this on the blog here with the podcast. There was a great article on ESPN, and I don't say that very often, but they talked to his assistant coaches who are based in Europe, Herzog, and I forget the other one. But anyway, they talked about the system that we have over there to scout the American-based players in Europe and how every weekend they're traveling everywhere. And the pitch that they use to get Green to show up. And so I think Klinsmann has some good talent evaluators on his staff, and I do believe he's a good talent evaluator on his own. So it'll be really interesting to see. We'll know if he comes on at halftime or sooner. He could start. It's possible. It's very possible he could start. Because really, do we need to see more of Chris Wondolowski? I don't need to. I mean, we know that Wondolowski could score against CONCACAF competition, but he can't cut it at the World Cup. He's past, you know, the age of 30. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Klinsmann started Green, but I don't think he will, because he'll want to protect him from criticism from supporters.
Yeah, because as you said, he can score against CONCACAF competition, but can the Magic W do it on a warm day in Brazil or against world-class competition? You know, they may have some kind of anti-W ward. You never know.
Yeah. You know? All right. So we'll see what happens with the Green. Anything's possible. I'm going to support him no matter what. He's a young kid, so get behind him. If he makes a bad pass, he makes something stupid, he makes a mistake, don't criticize him. Let's support him. Because, yeah. As I said in the blog, he has the chance, and Bayern Munich are crazy about him, he has the chance to be a legitimate global star for one of the best clubs in the history of Europe. We may never see that ever, ever again for a United States player.
Yeah, and as you say, get behind him. I would encourage all defenders to get behind him so he has a free run on goal, too. Thank you.
Yes, there we go.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, sorry, wrong button. Defense, get behind them, yeah.
Wrong button. Oh no, dang it, I do that every time. All right, sorry.
Hey, oh, there we go.
Come on, Mexico. Yeah. Let's bring that rubbish defending that you had during the World Cup qualification.
Yeah.
Rubbish.
Get behind them, especially if you played defense.
All right. Let's just look at the roster really quick. We won't run it down because, you know, chances are if you're listening to this podcast, you know who's in the mix. Because we are getting very good ratings now because of you, and you are all smart people. We will not talk down to you. But hold on, I got to bring up the
name. Well, unless you're a Chelsea fan.
Well, yeah, if you're a Chelsea fan, then we'll question your sanity. But, you know.
Yeah, although if you're a Chelsea fan, you're probably not listening to this podcast since we use multisyllabic words.
Oh, jeez. Come on now.
Oh, no, you're right. Those are the Stoke fans. Never mind. long ball, goal, score.
Krog says make fire.
Yeah, break leg, blood eat, yum.
All right. So my question for you, and I'll let you lead off with this, is just talk to me about one or two players that are on this current roster for this match that you want to see good performances for so you could feel better as we head into Brazil 2014.
At the fear of being obvious and concentrating on the stars, Bradley and Dempsey, because I want to see Bradley not drop off because he's now back in the MLS, no the, like the Ukraine. Sorry, MLS bots. And Dempsey, because Dempsey's looked so since his return to, not the, but to MLS. Even this season, the match and a half that I've seen him, he just looks off the pace at times, so I'm hoping he's not carrying some, you know, unknown injury or is, you know, starting to lose a step because he's in his 30s now, so... So, yeah, so at the risk of, like I said, concentrating on the stars too much, I want to see Bradley and Dempsey give a good performance because especially, you know, since we're playing Mexico and Mexico's kind of regaining some of their bravado, you know, now that they've qualified and put in a couple of good performances last time out.
Mm-hmm. Good. No, that's fine. And I was kind of on the same leg length. I'm thinking that I want them to do well as well. I want Dempsey and Bradley to, I almost forgot his name for a second, to show that they could still put in a shift, and they should. Hopefully they're motivated for that. And I never have any, well, about Donovan. I guess you could be concerned about him since he took his little...
His sabbatical.
But I think he'll be locked in. I never really worry about him. So I'll give you a couple names that I want to see. And I guess I want to see Omar Gonzalez have another solid game. And you could put in Beasler with that as well. Because they're the most likely center back pairing we're going to have this summer.
Yeah,
and while I like Beasler, I got question marks over Gonzalez.
Yeah, and I almost chose Gonzalez. He does still have the propensity to shut off at times, mentally or, you know, concentration-wise.
And then the other person I would mention for me is he's back with the national team, and we'll see. Hopefully he plays. I don't expect him to start, but that would be Maurice Adu. He's back in the fold because I really dislike Stoner Ronaldo or Kyle Beckerman, a.k.a. Stoner Ronaldo.
Yes.
Because I do believe that, sure, for the Gold Cup, Beckerman's fine, but we're in the group of death, people. And if you want to match Beckerman against the midfield of Ghana, who's going to be athletic, Germany, who obviously is very skilled, and even Portugal's, Beckerman just doesn't cut it for me from an athletic standpoint, but Maurice definitely has the tools. So hopefully he can impress Klinsmann to at least get into the picture. But I'm realizing the fact that Beckerman's going to be on the roster. But if he plays any significant portion for us this summer, I do believe the World Cup will be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, because it may be a disaster even with our best players. So
that's true too. Yes, you can make that argument.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll fall into that pothole when we get to it. So.
And maybe we won't.
Yeah, maybe American exceptionalism, soccer
that's
version.
Right. We don't. Yeah. Exactly. Right. We don't have it in politics anymore. But you know, maybe in soccer, maybe we could have that.
Yeah. Say. Yeah.
Yeah.
The less we avoid more
Let's
politics,
pass on that.
The better. Yeah, yeah, Let's pass. On that.
So, all right. So there we go. I've enjoyed our conversation today. very, very good. And again, I need to do some more. Let's wrap up here. But I know, as we said, we mentioned we have Everton, Arsenal on the weekend. And I do believe Champions League starts up again this weekend or this week. Is that correct?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I read that.
I think you are correct, but yeah, I don't recall.
All right, let me look this up, because the only reason I know this is because last week, remember, we did talk about the return of Gus Johnson, and I did read that. Yes, yeah, so it is. So Tuesday, oh boy. Tuesday, yeah. April 1, Champions League returns. It is Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, and Manchester United versus Bayern Munich, with Gus Johnson and Eric Wijnaldum making the call. God save us.
Oof. I'm going for a Bayern 6-0 win.
And then Real Madrid plays...
And more Moyes out banners.
Yes, and then Borussia Dortmund will travel to Madrid to take on Real on Wednesday, and then you have PSG versus Chelsea. So these are all intriguing matchups. Well, the Bayern Munich United one isn't all too intriguing. I just want to watch it to hopefully Bayern wins, 5-6-0 would be great. So Champions League is back, and then we're getting down to the nitty-gritty in the league, in the Premier League, so it's going to be great.
Yeah, including I was just thinking, including the relegation battles.
Which is as good as well. Cardiff, Crystal Palace, even Fulham today had some life in them, finally. So maybe they might be able to pull themselves out of the fire. It's unlikely.
I think Fulham's done.
It's possible, though. Come on, give them some hope.
Well, they don't have any hope without... without Dempsey. They're playing like 2 17-year-old strikers or something I saw today.
Mm-hmm. Moussa Dembélé, the second.
Yes.
They have another one. So maybe he'll be sold to Spurs as well in the future. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I was just about to ask, did they clone the first one, or is he...
So, all right. So thank you for tuning into the podcast, folks. We thank you for... helping us have this another record-breaking month, and we hope to have more in the future in April. And do remember, tomorrow is April 1st. Is it tomorrow? Tuesday.
Yes.
Tuesday is April 1st, so don't believe anything.
31 days in March, man.
Yeah, don't believe anything on Twitter on Tuesday. Just stay right off Twitter on Tuesday. You'll save yourself a lot of sanity.
Yes.
So, all right, for Corey Chatelaine, I'm Chad Smith. We will see you next week.
And hopefully one day I will be as daft as Ray Hudson.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.